Okay, are we recording, Jamie? We are recording. Excellent, excellent. Welcome, everybody, to the Outlaw Picks podcast. Veronica's just, she's got a note, she's cramming last minute.
I'm not cramming last minute, I'm just reviewing. Then when I say stuff, it makes sense the way it's packaged, and it's not just, you know, oh, I remembered this one thing that happened.
Flashcards are in here. The vault. No, absolutely, be prepared. The thing is, as well, you've written it in a way where neither I nor anybody else, and potentially even you, can read that.
No, what I've done is I've written them partially in Spanish, so you can't see and copy
look
them.
Look at that. Look at that. using a Spanglish code.
You're not taking nothing.
This is the thing, is if we ever have kids, she's going to teach the kids this Spanglish language as well, and they're going to be able to talk about
it. Oh, they're going to talk bad about you so much, just so you know. I'm forewarning you. Learn Spanish.
You're going to have to move your hoodie. It's obscuring my view of the TV. Thank you.
Learn Spanish or
what? Or else. Be isolated.
Well, I already do that when I call my sister.
Actually, I'll be honest. It's really quite peaceful to go and, like go and visit your grandma on a Spanish island, and no one speaks English, and I don't speak Spanish, so it's just like
I'm going to tell you something about it being very peaceful. It's peaceful for him, but for the person that has to translate word for word on my grandma to him, which wants to get, you know, she wants to get to know you and has all these stories to tell you at a million miles per hour.
She does not care that I don't speak Spanish. She talks to me anyway like I speak Spanish. Like wandering
and
around the kitchen,
chatting
away at me.
If I'm not there immediately to respond.
Well, I mean, that's beside the point. I should learn. No, you are right. I should.
You're not going to
learn. I've been hitting the head so many times.
No, it's just, I just feel like.
And like still, like at least once a day, Veronica hits me in the head. So, you know, it's no wonder I can't remember anything.
Like while you're asleep or while you're awake?
Well, both. I just don't normally wake up because you don't hit very hard. We got Mats the other day, so she was trash talking me, you see. And I did warn her. I said, look, like, you don't, is this a hole you want to dig here, really? Like, do you really want to start trash talking me? We got Mats, and immediately the trash talking started. She's like, oh, we should grapple. You're doomed. I'm like, straight away.
Because you trash talk me all the time.
What I'm doing is I'm preparing.
You're not preparing. Girls don't trash talk each other. Well, you don't need to prepare for that.
It's because they're not quick enough. Name a female fighter that's like super good at trash talk. Why not? Like Joanna was good at trash talk.
Okay, real quick, if Joanna would have trash talked Gadelia in Polish, that would have been like.
Bomb, yeah, but
like,
she didn't need to read.
Imagine, in Polish, you don't even understand what that sounds. Cool. It sounds even like more deadly assassin. But trying to do it in a second language where you have broken English
I think it's even better.
I don't know.
Come on. I mean, like Khabib made a whole new word, smash. Like, that's terrifying when Khabib says it because, you know, he doesn't need to say
much. Yeah, but
much.
It's you different just... to have one word, like, it's like your trademark work. Like, Alex Pajeda says chama, right? And then everybody can repeat that. It's something you can get behind.
I think the market's open. I think the market's open for a good female trash talker to come through.
It's not
like someone
be
that's
me.
Got,
I don't.
Someone that's got lyrics. You know what I mean? Someone that can come in and I don't know. I think that's what's missing. And I'm saying that based on the fact that
You seen the trash talk between Aileen Perez and Tracy Cortez.
No. They're trash talking each other.
Legit. So what happened was, I think Cortez missed weight against Rose Namajunas, right? And then Aileen said something online. And then Aileen, next fight, she missed weight. And then Tracy said something online. So then, like, Perez has been calling her trash and all sorts of things.
Really?
And then the last thing was, in the last fight, you know, Aileen just fought and she won. Apparently they had an interaction and Aileen was talking like, you know, mad shit about her. And Tracy goes on to Instagram and she goes like, I'm from the hood.
Oh, really?
And then she just goes like, I'm gonna need a minute. Turns around. It was a little bit like seeing my sister get animated in front of a camera. It was quite entertaining, to be honest. Yeah. I did dig it. I was into it. Are we going to get into some fights? Or
yeah, we can do if you want. Yeah.
All right.
Well, we're just going to talk about the main card. What is going on with this undercard? There's nothing that's really jumping out at me. I'm interested to see Ilya Topuria's brother fight. There's some really challenging names on here as well, isn't there? Look at this, the flyweight. I'm glad I'm not on comms, because imagine trying to say his last name, Tumendemberel. Tumend. I would imagine you get into a rhythm with it. It's got like a nice roll to it, but it's got like 15 letters in it.
Yeah, the best last name is Thickness.
That is a good nickname, isn't it? Thickness. Call me Thickness. Thickness.
That's like, yeah.
Colby Thickness.
It's like when Laura Senko had the Norma Dumont weigh in, and she was like, "Oh, she got a dump truck." She'd be Norma.
Laura said that.
Yeah, well, it just popped out.
That's why you need her on comms, because she can say things that other people can't. You know what I mean? Like, imagine one of the other commentators saying that. They'd be in immediately, "Hang on a minute. Let me give you a phone call." You get one of the Dana White phone calls.
No,
hang on a minute.
You.
Just before, and I don't want to dwell on this, but I would have loved to have overheard the conversation when Dana called up Bryce Mitchell and was like, "Bro, what are you thinking?" Of all the phone conversations that have ever happened in history, if I could listen in on one, I would have loved to have listened in on that one. Could you have? I know. Anyway, hilarious stuff. What I will say is we're recording this within like a couple of hours of the Adesanya Imovov fight night starting. So as soon as this is done recording, we're going to start watching that. So we're not going to talk about that fight night, because we're both sitting here very much hoping that in a couple of hours it's going to be a great bunch of fights. But you had a prediction. Do you want to talk about your prediction before the fights go, or do you want to pretend that you didn't make a prediction just in case you get it wrong?
Yeah, that one.
That one, okay.
Yeah. Well, the only thing that I said that, well, man, that was like, come on, man, is if you're fighting Shara Bullet and he has one eyeball, imagine if you close the other eyeball and then the doctor came in and was like, "How many fingers am I holding?" Even if he's beating you up, you just, it's like half the work is done for you.
You know what's interesting, though? Like, because obviously Michael Bisping had that issue with his eye as well. I wonder if there must not be a requirement to have both eyes available. There must not be a requirement, because he can't see out of that eye, can he? So that's what I'm saying. It's like, so if you're fighting someone that's got two very usable eyes, and during the fight you hit one of those eyes to the point where it's swollen shut, as long as they can see out the other one, they're good to go.
Yeah. Imagine if he was fighting DC, you would eye poke him in a second.
Oh, DC's got all the tricks. You know, the thing is that it's almost like he's desperate to tell everybody how much he cheats now. You know what I mean? When he's on commentary, it's like he reminds people of the towel
thing. He got in trouble recently. There has to be, because I think Anik mentioned something about eye pokes and stuff. He's like, "Come on, Anik, you know I can't talk about this."
I love you, but I could definitely make a technical breakdown video of DC's different eye poke techniques. Like honestly, crafted techniques, perfectly usable with the gloves, you know, like, put, and he had different ways of covering it as well. Like, he had that like the 90s like finger clap one. Do you remember that, Jamie, back in the day when people right? I was like, instead of saying that, "Oh, that's cool," you right? Like, that was one of DC's techniques, where he'd like, wham, in the eyes, and that was one of them. And then the other one was, he'd do closed fist and leave his little thumb out, and he'd just, and he'd drive it, he'd get his thumb right in there. So from most camera angles, it's looking like a normal closed fist, but accidentally thumb's sticking out on the bottom. Very, very clever techniques. But it's almost like now his career's come to an end and it's done. It's like he keeps reminding people of it, like making jokes about it. Fair play to him. I mean, he got away with it, so, you know, it's too late now.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about the main card. We're going to start with Jake Matthews against Francisco Prado, right?
Yep.
Now, Prado's moving up. I think he's going to... I mean, I know Jake Matthews was a lightweight back in the day, like a long time ago. I remember when he made his UFC debut.
2014.
Yeah. he had a, I remember chatting to his dad because obviously he moved up to welterweight at one point, but not only did he move up to welterweight, but he became a really big welterweight. And he had some kind of surgery on his like hips or something. I don't remember exactly. I remember his dad talking to me about it before one of the fights. And I was discussing with him how quickly he grew into the welterweight division. There was something about it, something holding his growth back, and all of a sudden it's like he was massive. And like, he's a big welterweight, and Prado to me, and I don't know whether it's because his last opponent was taller than him. What's his name?
Zellhuber.
Zellhuber, yeah. So he had a couple of inches height advantage.
Yeah.
Which made Prado look kind of small, didn't it?
Yeah, but it's kind of like Jake Matthews against the Afro.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Phil Rowe.
Phil Rowe.
Exactly.
Phil Rowe.
I was thinking that. And so what's interesting is that the problems that Jake Matthews had against Phil Rowe before he got to him are the same problems that Prado's potentially going to have against Jake Matthews.
But they're not that different in height.
They're not, but I think they're going to look different in height. Like,
bit
I think
reach.
Prado looks, again, and I think it might be because his last opponent was taller than him, but he looks like he's like 5'6 to me.
Yeah, he does.
He looks like he's built, like he's short and stocky and powerful, but everything he does, he has to kind of fly at his opponents a little bit, to Javonte Davis, to like make up for the fact that he's a bit shorter.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I understand. I think it's a lot of the style that's trained in, because he's from Argentina, and a lot of the boxing style that they do is very similar. It's a, it's just like the rhythm that he has with the coming over the top and the slipping from side to side to get to places, a lot of like the peekaboo type of style. But it's as well the rhythm that he has that people are able to read it. Like Zellhuber got to the point where he could just tell when he was coming in and when he was doing it. And he's very short, and he'll like do all these things to cover the distance and then reset back on the outside and then cover all this. So he like, it's like cavalry running in. You have the arrows. And you just, psh, psh, psh,
yeah.
You know, and take just, them all out before they get.
Off.
Yeah. And then imagine them, they got to the wall, and instead of like going, they went all the way back.
Yeah.
But one thing that he does that's really good is that when he's able to get his opponents kind of backed up, when they go towards what would be their right side, so his left, he has a few little things like he does the dip hook to the head, or he has the spin kick. But I've seen him throw that spin kick, and I don't know if he hasn't realized that why it's working when it works. Right, like when he's able to land it, it works really well. But because he kind of, you know, like cut the angle off and then was able to catch them as they were coming to him. But then sometimes I've seen him do it like out in the open, and I'm like, did you think that was gonna work, or did you just throw it? You know,
you gotta wonder sometimes how much people, because like, how often do people train in a cage? You know,
and the
other thing as well is even if they do train in a cage, how often are they training in a cage? Because the vast majority of gyms that we go to has got a cage if they're lucky, right? And if it's a big gym, they might have two cages, but that's very rare. So most of the time sparring goes on a big open mat that's got a padded wall and a caged wall, and unless people are really conscious about the space that they're working in, they don't really develop an ability to use the space against people, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like we talked about this like years and years ago. I remember talking about spinning kicks in particular. And they can be really useful if you understand when to apply them. And like, and this is one thing that McGregor was so good at with his left hand. That's like the cycle of putting people on the end of it by using the three fence panels. It was like a three fence panel cycle that he would trap people up against, and he would sweep them along the fence panel and hit them. And then he would release them if he didn't hit them and pick them up again, like a couple later.
Yeah.
And like, spin kicks can work really well if you can bring the person onto it. Same as that gazelle hook that Prado can use. If he can have Jake Matthews up against the fence and have him moving towards his left, towards that left hook. But the problem is, because Prado's got quite, he's very telegraphed in the way that he moves.
Mm-hmm.
Like he reminds me a little bit in the way that he moves, maybe with like less of a Muay Thai game, but like the way that Drew Dober kind of builds himself up as he moves in. You know what I mean? He generates a lot of power, and if he hits people, he's going to hurt them. But there is something that's quite telegraphed in that rise
Do you think it's because their like legs are similarly stocky? Like
super thick and powerful. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's an easy way of generating power. So it becomes kind of second nature to every time you want to throw a powerful punch, your legs straighten a little bit. You know?
Really excited.
A little bit, yeah. It's like, but then like other fighters have the same thing. Like I remember when I fought Mike Swick, I knew that like there was a telltale sign about his chest that when he was, because he was quite curved over, but when he was starting to attack, the shape of his chest would go like this. So I then started just to watch this area of his chest. So I'm like, okay, as soon as I see that area of his chest pop out, he's going to be moving at me. What are you grinning at?
What do you mean? Straight... Why? I didn't do anything.
I know you didn't. You didn't need to, but well, I'm talking about this you're technical breakdown.
You're like booby like.
Sorry, I'm body popping. Is that right? Okay. Scrap that. Go back to the next thing. What were we talking about again? Something about fighting, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Too easily distracted. Too easily distracted. Okay. So go on then. Jake Matthews against Francisco Prado. How do you see it going?
I think that Jake has more arsenal in his game. I think his game is a little bit more complete.
Mm-hmm.
In the way that he strikes, he mixes up more. He does a lot. He does a very good job by doing like a sort of a combination and then moving again and doing a combination. It kind of sucked at him fighting against Smelsberger.
Mm. Yep, Semmelsberger.
I'm like staring at the name.
You knew you were going to mess that one up as soon as you looked at it.
Okay, but I didn't like think about this as a legit red Smelsberger. Okay, I felt like there was a really big power difference in the fight. Like if it wasn't for the knockdowns, mm-hmm. Matthews would have had a good advantage. Were you able to see the fight against Prado and Azaitar?
I did watch it, yeah, but it was on like someone had filmed it on
their
phone.
Because it wasn't on Fight Pass. No. And I was able to see sort of less like the finish, which was the same thing on that left side when they were going towards their right. He was able to connect that spinning elbow, much like Jones did. Jones does when he touches a leg and goes for the elbow. No. But I feel like if he can pressure him onto that, then he has a lot of power to cause damage.
Mm.
But if he kept going versus Semmelsberger, then...
Yeah. I think this is a bit of a tee up for Jake Matthews, to be honest. I mean, Prado's just like I mean it's, you know, it says here Jake Matthews is 5'11 and Prado's 5'10. I think there's going to be a decent size difference between the two of them. Mm-hmm. I think Jake Matthews is going to look a decent bit bigger. He's got a 4-inch reach advantage. And the other thing as well is like the way that Prado moves, because it's so telegraphed. Like, for me, he's just got that extra experience, especially in the UFC, to be able to just kind of, like, manage that excited build-up of energy and just get out of the way of it. Like, he struggled a bit with Phil Rowe because of the, like, the height and reach of Phil Rowe, but all of the disadvantages he had in that fight, which he overcame, he's got advantages in this fight. And, like, if you go back and you look at Jake Matthews against Fialho, where he had him backed up against the fence. He had lovely boxing, kept working to the body as well. And every time Fialho swung back, he'd just dip out of the way. And I just kind of see him doing the same thing here. I think he's going to stop Prado pretty comfortably, to be honest. Like, I think Prado's going to look undersized and underpowered in this weight class. And Jake Matthews is going to push him around, beat him up and stop him. Probably early second.
Yeah, he's been training a lot with Jimmy Crute for this fight over in Thailand as well. And you see him, and they don't look that different in size.
No. That's the
you
thing.
Know? And Jimmy Crute, he has like those big legs to deal with. So it's somebody that doesn't have the same style, but can offer the same, strength.
There's going to be loads of people in you know, if Jake's training in Thailand, there's going to be loads of people that can replicate Prado's style. Mm. Like, even with... why am I forgetting his name? He's a lightweight. Fiziev, the way that Fiziev moves, he's way more like anchored and disciplined in his movement, but he's still got that little lift because he's got powerful legs.
Yeah.
You still see him kind of lift out of himself as he starts to fire. And I just think that gives Prado away. And I think that, you know, like some fighters that do it that are more experienced get away with it because they know they do it, you know, so they're better at covering it. Whereas I don't think Prado's as, yeah. I don't think he's realized how much he gives away in his movement before he starts to go. And I think Jake's just been able to pick him off. Pretty comfortable fight for Jake Matthews, it should be, my opinion.
Yeah. He's almost always been the favorite in his fights, you know?
Jake Matthews? He almost always fights in Australia as well, though, doesn't he? Do you know what I mean? He's like one of the... They're always going to match him well because he's
20
one of
UFC fights. That's crazy.
Yeah.
I think the experience is also going to be... Like, he's had more UFC fights than Prado's had fights.
Yeah. Yeah. 20-7 for Jake Matthews and 12-2 for Prado. And the thing is with that as well is it skews all their stats because like Jake Matthews' stats are all based on like a ton of UFC fights and Prado's had what, 3?
Yeah. And he went over because when was it? When he fought in Australia against Makhachev. Makhachev Volkanovski fight card. Yeah, when he fought Malarkey.
What's your pick then?
Yeah, I'm going to pick
Jake Matthews. Yeah. What? Any particular type of prediction?
I just think by decision, I feel like Prado is a pretty tough kid to, even if he's really badly hurt, like I feel like he's powerful enough to fight through things.
Yeah, see, that's another thing though as well. Like Zeluba beat the snot out of him. Like
he's kept going.
But I don't know if he can take those same kind of shots from Jake Matthews.
Yeah, but I don't think Matthews has the same sharpness that Sol Hooper has. Like, Sol Hooper is really, like, technically sound. Everything's sharp. Everything's straight. Like, straight.
Yeah, but Jake Zell Hooper's built like a coat hanger, though. Like, Jake Matthews is built like a tank. Like he's gonna,
sure.
I'll be honest, I was surprised how many shots Fiallo took before he went down. But I don't even see his face holding up with the damage that he took in that last fight. I know that fight was a while ago, wasn't it? He's had some time to recover, but still.
A year ago.
Like I don't know. This just seems, it just feels like a tee up for Jake Matthews, really, this, for him to have a really good first round finish and, you know. But I agree with you on his toughness. I think he can get into the second round, maybe even late second round. Yeah. But
another good thing that he has for him is that he's very young. And at that age, you can learn and absorb and apply very quickly from fight to fight. I feel it's a lot more, like the growth is a bit more exponential than the later on you get in your career. Yeah. But then you're kind of more formed, and this is the type of fighter that you are, basically. You get a little bit.
But then you also don't want to be taking damage at this point in your career too much. And him stepping up a weight class to fight Jay Matthews is not a good move. I don't think it's a good move. I think he gets beaten up pretty good in this fight. I mean, he might surprise me, but he might also take a couple of fights off his career by doing this. Because Jake Matthews is a good fighter. A good fighter, and he's boxing is way cleaner. Even if it was just a boxing match with 4 ounce gloves, Jake still, I think, beats him up. You know? And like, and I don't think Prado's got the ground game to take Jake down and hold him down. Even if technically he's got some advantages, I don't think he's got the physicality to do it.
Yeah.
Again, like I might see him face off and be like, oh yeah, no, actually they're pretty much the same size. But I remember Jake Matthews when he was a lightweight, and then I remember him moving up to welterweight and the difference between the size of him from one to another, you know. And like, imagine then Phil Rowe standing next to Prado. Like Prado's gonna look like, it's gonna look like a scene out of Lord of the Rings. They're so different in size, you know. I don't know. And Phil Rowe's arms were like, what, 82 inch reach or something?
Yeah, he's really tall.
He had a massive reach advantage, whereas now Jake Matthews is the one that looks, he's going to look physically a lot bigger. I'm interested to see him face off, but I think it's a tilt for Jake Matthews, this one. Okay, right. So light heavyweight next. Jimmy Crute, he's been training with Jake Matthews, you say?
Yep.
And he's fighting Rodolfo Bellato, who is fun to watch. Good in the clinch, likes to fight close range, good elbows, knees to the body, good knees to punches on the same side as well. Bit of a big puppy energy to him, the way that he moves sometimes. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do get what you mean.
Like, I watched some of his kickboxing matches like earlier on in his career, and like he's got like a kind of a he's a bit big puppy. You know what I mean? Like most people, he's gonna beat him because he can throw himself at them and knock them out. A bit like Johnny Walker in his early career. Like he's big enough and is limmy enough to be able to catch him with something, and he's a little bit tidier sometimes, but. I don't know. I also feel like Jimmy Crute he's lost a bit of momentum, hasn't he?
Yeah, well, he took his gloves off in his last fight when he lost against Adolfo Menefield.
Yeah.
That he got guillotined.
Alonso.
Mm.
Adolfo Bellata.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to see through this mic, okay? Oh, yeah.
We'll have to get you a clear one. I have to get you a glass mic stand. I just kind of feel like...
And, okay, real quick, Wanda, I'm glad that Joe Rogan kind of said, like, nah, that was a legit guillotine, because it was also a neck crank, and I've been caught in those while training. That is horrendous. It doesn't feel like a choke. It feels like your whole skull is going to pop out of your head into your chest, like the way that he grabbed it, because I think DC was trying to allude that he tapped really quickly.
Mm.
It was like, oh, that was... And then Joe Rogan was like, no, man. It was sort of like a neck crank as well. So good job on him for telling. So it didn't... Because he kind of cut him off from saying that. So it's not like the last thing you hear of the fight being like, oh, he just gave up. You know, that's kind of unfair.
Yeah.
To say that. Because he's... Man, he's been through like hard fights and he's kept going. He's really, really tough. It was really unfortunate, him versus... Like the leg injury versus Anthony Smith,
that was weird. Yeah,
that was
just like, that's a particular point on the leg though. You know, we talk about calf kicks, but that was almost at the side of the knee, and it does the same thing, it seems. But that was like really bad. His leg went completely dead. And I mean, he's just, I don't know. I always felt with Jimmy Crute that he kind of got to the UFC a little bit too soon, you know, kind of similar to what we've just been talking about with Prado. Like a lot of these young fighters, they don't seem to be getting the experience that they need outside the UFC first.
Yeah.
Like they seem to get grabbed up at like 10-0, and they especially because, you know, the problem is like the stage is now set that if you get to 10-0 and you've got a decent following on Instagram, most likely you're going to get a shot on Contenders, and if you win that, then most likely you're going to get a UFC contract, which then means your career's begun at 10-0, 11-0. But then if you look at the people that they fought up to that Contender Series fight, they're like 2-4 and
yeah,
one
well
and
that,
six.
That's like exactly what the next fight is going to,
like that's, that,
to
and,
showcase.
And this is why, like although, you know, obviously, you know, Adolfo Bellato is fun to watch, like he's not technically very good, you know what I mean? Like it's not like a very pretty style. And I just don't feel like he's met enough adversity through his career to really, you know, bring out the best skills that he needs to be competing at this level. Because, I mean, this is like light heavyweight, you know, like imagine him competing against an Alex Pereira. Mm. It shows you the difference from one, you know, one level to another. And I feel like Jimmy Crute, he maybe joined the UFC too soon, then just never got out of that pool.
Yeah.
Johnny Walker, another one, like joined the UFC a bit too soon, perhaps, and just never got out of that pool where they're like, they're trying to find themselves as fighters.
But, well, like personally, what I think sucked about that is that the training gets different when you're a UFC fighter. You can't just go into a gym and train. It's almost like, oh, you're a UFC fighter. You got tapped. You know, like there's a lot of weirdness that comes to it.
Yeah.
As well as the limiting of competition. Like, you can't go do some kickboxing or some to work on your striking specifically in a competition sense. Like, you have to kind of wait till you get a fight call because it's against your contract. And the only thing you're left to do is some grappling matches. And it's like, if you lose a grappling match, then, you know, it's like,
your ground game's no good.
Yeah, it's like, and not only
and
that, but it's like...
And then coaches start to be weird as well.
It is.
Like the amount of times I remember I've been watching fights and listening to the corner team, and like you've got the striking coach telling them to separate and throw kicks, and you've got the grappling coach telling them to clinch and take him down and take their back. And like you've got these both of these different opinions coming in the corner at the same time. Basically because the striking coach wants the highlight reel for him and the grappling coach wants, you know what I mean? And it's like, I don't know, like I think like it must be so much more challenging for like a young fighter now to like find their feet in the sport. I think so many people are expedited before they're quite ready to, you know. I don't know. I just feel like Jimmy, if you look at Jimmy Crute's record, right? Like he was doing really well, and he came to the UFC and he maintained that momentum, and then obviously he had that loss to Misha Cirkunov. Then he had a couple of fights where again he's fighting guys on a good level to him that are competitive, Oleg Shejuk and Bukauskas, good performances. But then Anthony Smith, and now he's just kind of like tumbling a little bit. And I've been there. I've been on a 4-fight losing streak before. It's not pleasant. But I feel like the thing that kind of got me through it was the fact that like I'd maybe had 25 fights before I joined the UFC, so I knew what losing was like, and I kind of not that I'd become accustomed to it because you never do, but I don't know. You just kind of like this is a rough position for him to be in right now. To then go in to fight a guy that is on a hot streak and has got the confidence of someone that feels like as long as your name's not Vitor, then he's going to beat you.
But like on his in his last fight versus
Pateria,
whatever. He got dropped bad in the second round. Like he was almost knocked out unconscious, and he was able to come back because Ihor just like exhausted himself, something that he's done before. So, but Jimmy Crute showed that and three times more when he fought Alonzo Menifield.
Yeah, but the difference is the difference is Jimmy Crute came out of that with a loss on his record, whereas Bellotto came out of that knowing full well that he picked himself up and turned the fight around. So that like that's the difference with their confidence.
No, yeah. One, you know what I mean? 1,000 and taking off your gloves and that like meh.
Yeah.
I mean this, completely understand.
The thing is what this might translate to is quite a reckless performance from Jimmy Crute, right? It's gonna do one or two things. Like, I remember being in this situation myself, right? I've lost 4 fights in a row and like I've got one more fight, and it's basically like the result of this fight would determine the direction that you go for the rest of your life. That's kind of how it feels at that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And I would imagine that, especially because Jimmy Crute was already in that position where he took his gloves off. Like, I didn't take my gloves off after the Chris Lytle fight, but I certainly walked into the press conference afterwards with the mindset of, that's it, I'm done, you know? And the only reason I came back for another one was was because Lorenzo had tweeted that I was going to get another fight. So I'm like, whoa. But the difference in your mentality going into that fight can be very, very different one way or the other. Like my mentality was, well, Lorenzo's taken a risk on me because he's going to get criticized for keeping me on the roster on a 4-fight losing streak. So I'm going to do everything I can to put this right and to get a win. Excuse me. Move to Vegas. New coaches, et cetera, et cetera. He could be going into this fight like I went into the Chris Lytle fight, which was, I don't give a damn what happens here. I just want to scrap.
Yeah.
Right. And that wasn't a good mentality because, like, I love Chris, but I should have beaten him on that night, you know?
Mm.
And I just wasn't making good decisions. If Jimmy Crute goes in with the, well, I'm having one more roll of the dice and I'm going to put a few dollars in my account before I do something else, then he could be quite reckless, and we might get a wild 5 minutes where he drops Bellotto, and then Bellotto comes back in the second round and beats him up and chokes him. You know what I mean? Because I was actually quite impressed with Bellotto's ground game off the bottom against Petrina. Petrina?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, that's the only guy he's lost to twice. And I thought the second fight was, again, kind of dealing with the stress of fighting someone that you've only, the only person that you've lost to. Like, he was kind of reaching with submissions a little bit. And I actually thought he looked pretty good off his back setting up that triangle. But I also...
Yeah, that was pretty nice. Because didn't he have it from, like, half guard? And it's like when you kick that far leg, so the person kind of does you know, like involuntarily does that.
Yeah.
And then you can switch your hips again and close the triangle.
It was,
he does that really well.
Yeah. I mean, I was surprised actually when he hit the floor. I was like, you know, he moves pretty well off his back. But again, he doesn't want to be there against Jimmy Crute. But then that, again, goes back to how does Jimmy Crute fight? Does he go, last roll of the dice, let's have some fun, let's see if I can get a fight night bonus?
I don't think he's in that mindset, because if you come back, and this is now from my personal experience of losing a whole bunch of fights in a row, like when you come back to fight again, especially if there's been a bit of time, or especially if you thought about not doing it, you must have found love for doing it while doing it for you to want to come back. You must have at least gone back into the gym and just trained because you love to train, not because you're a UFC fighter, not sometimes, because you're all of this when you started really young. Like, you come back because you want to be there and you think, you know, this martial arts is mine, and it's not like I have to give up because I'm not winning a UFC title. Like, I love martial arts. Why?
Yes, sometimes. And I think that was the case with, like, Robert Whittaker, who, like, after losing to Izzy was like, yeah, I'm done with this, and then started going back to Gi Jiu-Jitsu and then got back into it because of that. I do think that's the case. But I don't know. That's what I'm saying. I don't know what the mentality of Jimmy Crute is. I don't know whether that's the case. I mean, his last fight was July of 2023. So he's had a good chunk of time out. But is that good chunk of time, let me take a break, let me get back into training, actually, I'm really enjoying this, let me see if the UFC will fight again? Or has he just been kind of hanging out and ticking over and training, and the UFC called him and he's like, yeah, why not? I might as well have another go. Like, you just don't know what his mentality is, I'm saying.
You don't know.
You know, and like, you could get two very different performances from him. Like, if he comes out thinking to himself, right, okay, this is my last opportunity, I need to get a win here, he might come out and take this fight.
I think
to the
he's going to finish Bellotto.
You reckon? Yeah.
I think he's going to, because although Bellotto has a really good clinch where he connects with his knees and stuff, sometimes it's like his system has like a brain freeze.
Yeah.
And he'll stay there and you get punched like 800 times. And I just think Crute has enough power and enough determination and all of it to keep going. The reason why that guillotine sunk in so quick versus Menefield is also because he kind of slipped at the same time that Menefield kind of chucked him forward.
Yeah.
And then that gave him the head start so quick it was basically already done by that point. If he would have continued because of that, you know, it's like, imagine you're in a sprint race and you fall and you have to get up and go again. Like, you're not going to win if the guy's ahead of you anyway. But I just feel like Bellotto is going to put himself in danger, like he did in the Contender Series fight. Like, he's done. He's been dropped by, just because it's worked out for him so far, I don't think it's going to every time. And maybe if Crute doesn't do it, somebody will eventually.
Mm.
If he stays in the, like, if he would do that to Pajeda, Pajeda would knock him out like 20 times.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Exactly. It all depends on what version of Jimmy Crute shows up, though, doesn't it?
You know, they're going to do some of the, what do you call the traditional hakas?
The haka, yeah.
They're going to do some of that. He's going to get, who is it? Kai Car France. He's going to go out, do the haka, and then he's going to get pumped up, and he's going to knock out Bellotto.
He's on the card.
Yeah, I know, but it doesn't mean he might not show up and do it.
Oh, I see, right, okay.
You know?
So that's your prediction then?
Yeah.
Right, okay.
All right. What's your prediction, the next fight? Because we need to keep this going.
I kind of feel like Bellotto might have a rough first round and probably get, like, taken down and work off his back a little bit. But I don't know. I just feel like momentum's playing a big part in this fight. and I can't be certain that Jimmy Crute's, like, taking the time off to regroup properly. And I don't know.
Yeah,
that's my because, to be honest, it would be nice for Jimmy Crute to win, for him to get back on track and stay in the division, and for Bellotto just to get a reality check for a second again, just to like Prado, like, just nudge him towards being a bit more technical and a bit less reckless.
Mm. Like, he also goes back in a straight line, like, pretty bad.
Exactly.
Like,
yeah,
just in the line of the opponent to crack him. And Jimmy Crute, if you see the way that he fought Modestus, like, he has the power to do that. Not all fighters have the power to do that, but definitely Crute does. And this is going to 1,000% be if Jimmy Crute believes in himself or not. But he also has to realize that he's been put through the ringer. Yeah, you know, like from the start, like really tough matches back to back to back. And he was ranked, and that sometimes, you know, like you get it a bit too quick and you just, you're not ready yet.
You know what would be smart is if Jimmy Crute tries to kick Bellotto in the leg in the same spot that Anthony Smith stopped him, because Bellotto's so heavy on his lead leg. And he knees with his right knee as well, which means he's going to have to be standing on his left leg to throw that.
Mm.
If you can damage that. I'm just looking at the height and reach. So there's only, again, according to UFC stats, there's 1 inch in height advantage and 3 inches in reach advantage for Bellotto. He's got a high output for strikes, 6.47 compared to 3.68 for Jimmy Crute. Good striking accuracy. Again, this is based on less fights, though, but I don't know. Like, I feel like momentum's a big thing. I can see Bellotto coming through a rough first round, but I also could imagine Jimmy Crute to, if he's going to make a good decision, he's going to grapple. He's going to take him down. He's going to control him against the fence and beat him up. And that might not be a bad thing if Bellotto's working off his back with submissions, because he might wear himself out trying. And then, you know, Jimmy Crute's going to start the second round stronger.
So who are you picking?
I feel like Bellotto might do it, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like momentum is a lot in this sport. And he's only lost to one guy, and Jimmy Crute is not Vitor Petrino. And I think that's one demon he has to exercise. But aside from that demon, I think Bellotto's fully confident that he's going to smash his way to the world title. He just seems like that kind of guy with that vibe to me. And I think he's that big puppy energy that he's got, complemented with confidence, is what Jimmy Crute was when he first joined the UFC.
Yeah, but sometimes you just need, voluntarily or not, a little nudge towards forced growth if you're going to continue.
For sure.
You know, it kind of puts you in the spot where you have to...
It just depends on whether Jimmy
Crute is... Caterpillar yourself and like... go into a pretty
yeah but it, but you know, at the same time, you know, that might spur Jimmy Crute on to being a world champion. It might spur him on to being a world-class coach, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, you don't know which direction his life's gonna go, and I feel for him because it's kind of hanging on this fight, really, you know.
Mm. That's why he's gonna pull it out the bat.
Was he 1-3-1 in his last 5 fights? It's a rough spot to be in.
There's a bunch of fighters who've been on a 3 and a 4 fight win streak, and they've come back.
I know. You're just going to fight like a thug.
Yeah, and Jimmy Crute could do that, which is why I'm picking him.
Absolutely.
And you're picking Bellotto, and now next fight.
Well, I mean, Bellotto does fight like a thug.
These people got places to go, babe.
Well, this one's a fast one.
We need to go.
This one's a fast one because, like, it's a heavyweight. 7-4 versus 7-0. I mean, talk about big puppy energy. Talisson Teixeira is...
like 20 feet tall.
He's like
a Brazilian skyscraper.
Right, he's like a 150-pound Great Dane puppy jumping into the arms of a teenage girl. Like, that's the size he looks at when he jumps on his coaches. He's massive. He's like limmy. I've used that word twice now in the podcast. But then you've got Justin Taffer, who's like a tank, like a pile of rocks, who walks forward, can take a shot, can punch. 6 foot versus 6 foot 7.
Mm.
Like, train wreck of a fight. I'm excited for it. 9-inch reach advantage for Teixeira.
Yeah.
And the thing is as well, he's only had one fight in the UFC, so of course, all of his stats are completely swayed in that direction. Strikes landed per minute, 14.87.
Well, like, this would be his UFC debut, because he won in Contender Series. Mm. And when he was fighting, because he fought Arthur Lopez, right? And Arthur fought him with a little bit more aggression, something that I've watched some of his LFA fights, and the people were like, dude, just tap when the fight starts. Like, they were like, oh, God, he's so big. Like, they haven't gotten over the fact that he was as tall as he was, and they already kind of gave up before the fight started. But Arthur Lopez did start the fight really well. He was pressuring him. He was connecting well with shots. He was just not giving him the respect that tall people with long limbs want to have, so that they could punch you out over there. The only thing is that, like, when he went out from pressuring him against the fence, he just went out in a straight line, just like that, and he connected. I don't think he had adjusted to how long his arms were. I think he thought he was out of range, and he was like, oh no, I still got like 5 more inches of arm length to connect. That was pretty nasty. But Tafa, I like Justin Tafa.
Yeah, he's fun to watch.
He is, and he's like, because he has a brother, right? Junior Tafa.
Mm-hmm.
I like Justin Tafa. Yeah. Like, he's like southpaw. He just has good attitude. One thing that I liked was when he fought against Lane, he like oblique kicked him in the leg. And he's basically just waiting to connect with his right hand. That it's a little bit like a hook, a little bit like a straight overhand. And he adjusts it well to connect in order to knock you out. But then it kind of like, if you get past that, then it starts to get predictable that he's going to come with that punch.
Mm-hmm.
Like people
That's
know.
That's why Jorgen De Castro knocked him out the way he did.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But then he was able to catch Porter that the same way. I think the fact that Mark Hunt is his idol is going to help in this fight, because then like Mark Hunt did fight Stefan Struve. He's probably like watching that, be like, yeah, that's going to be me, just like my idol, you know?
Yeah. Like this, I mean, this, unfortunately, if you look at Struve's record, he's like, that's the kind of fight that this could potentially be, is, you know, Roy Nelson tied to Avassa, Mark Hunt bombs over the top, guy gets too tall. 7-0 with not a lot of experience. Like, this is an ideal example of what I'm talking about. This guy needs like another 5 or 6 fights before he's on this stage.
Yeah,
in my opinion, I feel like the MMA industry is like pulling these prospects in too soon and chewing them up a little bit. And I mean, Junior Tafa again, he's potentially one of those prospects that came in and got chewed up a little bit too soon, but he couldn't get matched. I remember calling his early fights, like, he couldn't get fights, so this is why he ended up, you know, getting signed. But
and it was also in an Australia fight, wasn't it? Yeah, it was UFC 243.
Yeah,
Whittaker versus Adesanya.
Yeah, I remember calling.
It was his fourth fight in the UFC.
The Carlos Felipe fight was the one I called, I think. But yeah, like, I don't know. I mean, as long as Junior Tafa takes his time and he allows this guy to like burn off a little bit of excitement and looks for his opportunities, I think he's going to crack him and knock him out. Like, the downside to being tall is that for whatever reason, you seem to crumble a lot quicker when you get caught with a massive right hand on the chin over the top.
It's really weird to see, like,
it's just like,
it just takes
going.
Him so much longer to get to
yeah,
the ground.
I think that's what it is. I think it's more dramatic. And the other thing as well is, especially when you're like, you're over like 6'4", like, you can get punched over the octagon wall. You know what I mean? So like when people see your head come over the top of the octagon fence, they're like, oh no, that's really bad. But it's, you know. You know, like when you see someone like bent at the waist over boxing ropes and they're just getting pounded. Yeah. And the guy's effectively ground and pounding because they're so far over the top rope.
Yeah.
Like I can see that happening here. But perhaps because Taliesin is undefeated, knocking everybody out like it's too easy for him, he might be too eager and just run onto something. He might just come flying forward and Taffer's just bowl over the top, crack him on his chin.
Yeah,
my money's on Tafa for knockout, just because I can see the pitfalls of a person like Taliesin Teixeira, you know, at the 25 years old, heavyweight. You know,
it's just it's very hard because like him, you gotta imagine how his sparring goes, right? Like him in a gym, he's taller than everybody, so he can just jab or like jab cross and pretty much get away with a lot of stuff. Unless somebody comes in and throws a haymaker at him. But then if you do that in sparring, you are not a good partner. You know, you're kind of an asshole.
His coach is Lucas Martins. Remember the fighter Lucas Martins? He used to be on the UFC roster a while ago. Where are we? Fought Darren Elkins, fought Mercer Bektic. got a win over Rob Whiteford. He was a good fighter, but he was a lightweight.
Hmm.
You know what I mean? He's a 6 foot tall lightweight who's now training a 6 foot seven heavyweight.
Yeah.
I think he's going to be like, it's Big Puppy energy. I keep using that phrase. I've got to stop. But that's what I kind of see coming from this one. He's going to come flying at Junior Taffer, and Taffer's going to keep tucked up, and he's going to see his opportunities, and then wham. And Teixeira's going to peel off the canvas like a tree that's been cut at the roots.
Yeah. I mean, when he knocked out Lane and then like continued with some shots. I remember because we did the picks for that fight, and I thought Lane, I was like, yeah, well, before the fight got stopped with the eye poke, I felt like Lane was finding his distance, yeah, doing well. I do think he's tough, is going to have some adversity, but his issue, other than when he ran on to Castro, but Castro is also like a same short, powerful as he is. Yeah. It's a little bit different, but when he loses, it's kind of like he gets taken down and the fight gets long and wears out.
And Jorgen De Castro is a big puncher, and Taffer supplemented his power by running at him.
Exactly. He moved into
the power.
I just don't think he respect. It was like, because he'd only had 3 fights at the time, and you know, when you get knocked out, you think it's going to happen in every single fight.
Yeah.
And then it's like, okay, well, I don't want this to take any longer. Let's go. I want to go celebrate. Her. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like that might happen. Or we really good. No, I think Taffer by knockout.
Yeah. Okay, co-main event. Come on, let's get onto the... This is the fight I'm most interested
in. This should be the main event.
It should.
We saw the countdown, right? And it was Dricus and Strickland hitting pads. And then they put Zhang Weili hitting pads. And I don't know if they did that on purpose to make them look horrible. But, geez, you had Strickland doing this. And then Zhang Weili like, pop, 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 pop. Sick. Sick. Yeah, right?
She looked like
China powerhouse. Bum, bum, bum.
It was like going from footage of like me to footage of Manny Pacquiao. Like, come on, don't do that to these boys. Like,
yeah,
you know.
No, they should have kept that way separate because you could watch it and you're like, geez, best fighters in the world stuff. And then you're like, wait a second, this girl is better.
She's very, very good. I'm really excited about this fight because, well, first of all, every time I see Tatiana Suarez, I have no idea how she makes straw weight. Like, she's
massive.
She's big. She's strong. She's like built structurally like a bantamweight, and she can wrestle. And I feel like if anybody's gonna beat Weili, it's gonna be taking away one of the things that she does so well. And obviously her striking is very, very strong. She's very good in the clinch. I feel like physically, statically, I bet she's incredibly very, very strong. When it hits the floor, she's also got good submissions off her back. But I feel like if Suarez is able to just kind of hold her in that in-between where she's not allowing her to jiu-jitsu, but she's not giving her enough space to strike, like there's a real good chance that Suarez just can dominate this with wrestling. And I do, like, she's got the size, she's got the conditioning, she's got the mental attitude, like the fortitude for it. And I, you know, that's the one area of Zhang Weili's game that I'm like, if someone's going to beat her, it's going to be that particular style. And that's Tatiana Suarez. That's what she does. I just wonder whether she can get through the striking of Weili to get to a safe place. And if she's on the floor, whether she can stay out of getting, you know, swept or tangled up for 25 minutes or less.
Yeah.
I think this is a really, really interesting fight. It feels like a very kind of, it's an interesting and new problem for Zhang Weili, because I can't think of anybody else, not even in this division, that can cause her the same kind of problems that Suarez can. You know, it's like what everybody hoped Carla Esparza would be for the division, and like ultimately Carla just. She doesn't have that same kind of mental toughness that Tatiana Suarez
has. I don't think it's only like the mental toughness. I think it's also like the length that Suarez has. Because Suarez, this part of her, if you see like her shoulders, like that part is really good. And she uses that very well to get because she's been wrestling since she was three, that head and arm position that she has, she's developed such a systematic game from the head and arm to the dars to the guillotine. Like when she was fighting against Jessica Andrade, she did like four different feints on submissions that caused her to react, Andrade to react, and then she got the guillotine. Okay, one thing real quick. I don't understand why certain commentators said that she didn't even have her hand clasp when it was clearly one of those guillotines, the same one that John Jones got Loito Machida with. It's just when you get in, once you get this blade over here, you can push it whichever way that you want. Like the configuration doesn't matter. It was like the arm was there. If you can see the glove up here, that is it.
Mm. I was just looking at a reach. She's got a 3-inch reach advantage over Weili. She's got a 66-inch reach. That's a good, and she's got like a good wingspan as well, which means that
I don't think Weili's 5'4". I think she's bit shorter.
I think
5'4", and I think I'm taller than her.
Yeah, I think Suarez is going to look physically bigger than her, and I also think with that reach advantage when she's, because this is, I mean, it says Zhang Weili's a switch stance fighter, which of course she is, but whenever she's going to be in an orthodox stance, Suarez onto that single leg, being able to pull that single leg in, is going to be really, really useful, and she's going to be able to reach a bit further with those long arms as well.
Yeah, and what's cool, like she did, the only thing that it was kind of a bit different, because I went and I watched her first, we're actually on the same card together like 7 years ago. That's crazy. Can't believe it's been so long. But the way that she would grapple there, like the way she grappled up until the Nina fight, and you saw in the end of this first round that she kind of went like that. And I remember watching that and just being like, oh, that's not okay. And then it was when we watched the countdown show that she talked about actually hurting her neck in that fight. So I think the physicality and her having hurt her knee will play into it, because I don't think she approaches the wrestling like she didn't approach it the same as she did in her previous fights. Like if you see her against Nunes or Esparza or even Grasso, the way that she was wrestling up against the fence was a bit different than the way that she did these last two fights. And I don't know if it's because, you know, her knee was completely destroyed, and the rehab for that is one thing, but the confidence to be able to use your knee in the same way without having that in your mind is also another thing that might play into the factor of it. But it was really cool because, like, she went in for that single leg. So she gets in the single leg. She has really good head pressure. And then she, with her right leg, she always reaches over for the leg, whether it's up against the fence. Like, she prefers to do it because she has a really good system of it. But because she's so long, there's a little bit kind of jumping around. But because she's so long, she's able to get into positions where normally you would lose it because you don't reach. Like, her leg just reaches that, and then she's able to hook herself in. And like Zhang Weili versus Zhang, like, her legs are really powerful, but it was a point where, like, her leg was here. But if she would have had a bit more of a reach, she could have been able to pull herself over. But because her legs are so strong and kind of muscular, it doesn't have that same overall reach, you know. And in those aspects, Suarez has really been able to just create a very advanced system. And, like, mind you, she was doing this 7 years ago, you know. And I think the grappling aspect for women's has definitely developed very quickly. But she had already had this, like, I'm watching her fight then from 7 years ago and kind of now understanding all the intricacies of what she was doing. Like, she was ahead of the game in a way. And just,
she's just not at the fights because of injuries and stuff, isn't she?
Like, damn.
What's your prediction?
Man, we talked about the other fighters like 300 hours. We're going to give these ladies some respect. I don't know. I don't know, because I think the experience plays a big role for Zhang Weili. Like, Zhang Weili's had so many, you know, like, five-round fights, as well as just being at that pressure situation. I know Suarez has been competing since she was 3 years old. So it's that you have that familiarity with competition, as well as her being in Patchy Mix's corner and being around the sport in that aspect. And it's really strong when you have this, first of all, being undefeated, but just feeling like life wants to take what you work so hard away from you and you just refuse. But I just don't know if she's going to, like that last round with Nina, when she wasn't able to completely get her way, she was, I don't know how much that was because of like a cardio issue or how much it was because she really hurt her neck. Mm-hmm. And then now in the third round, it's a little bit more like, well, relevant, I guess. But yeah, Fei Zhang is a tank, man. She is like, if I was, I don't know, like 12, and I was just getting into martial arts, Zhang Weili would be the fighter that I would aspire to be like. Mm.
She's got like a very kind of old school way of preparing as well. Even though she's, you know, she's trained in Thailand and, you know, she's working with a lot of like, you know, MMA coaches, jiu-jitsu coaches and stuff. There's just some kind of, I often see her doing things that have got like old kind of, like kung fu logic to them, you know what I mean? Which like standing on their tiptoes, holding kettlebells, and I would imagine that's one of the reasons why she's so physically strong in clinch positions. It's because she does a lot of isometric training.
I think that's also why, because our coaches mentioned her being able to pick up techniques and apply them very quickly. For me, one of the reasons is because of that. Because when you have such good control of your body in all different situations, in all different positions and in things that are a little bit uncomfortable, it's about your mind understanding what the program that you have to follow is in order to complete that. You don't have to prepare your body to do that because her body's already prepared. Mm. But I just feel like it's just so natural for Suarez to do, you know. But then Weili's been really good at getting the being a mixed martial artist when it comes to some fighters. Like Amanda Lemos is a very strong puncher. Zhao Nan Yang is a very strong striker, but she was able to implement a mixed martial arts game plan. You know, not just, oh, I'm going to strike for strike you or do anything like, I'm going to take you to where you're weakest in order to succeed.
Mm.
And I feel like the losses versus Rose Namajunas is really developed her as a martial artist.
Mm.
Which way are you going?
I think Weili's gonna defend her belt.
Yeah.
I think Suarez is gonna make it competitive, and I think at the end of it you could argue that she won three rounds, but I think Weili's probably gonna be able to defend a lot of takedowns. If she gets taken down, she's gonna be threatening enough to keep the fight moving on the floor. And I feel like she's just gonna kinda maybe beat Suarez to the punch whenever she's got space, you know, work on her legs, pick her off with fast hands. And then when Suarez is coming into the clinch, she'll be so solely focused on trying to grapple that Zhang Weili's elbows and knees on the brakes and stuff are going to start to be more prevalent in those exchanges. Like I think the feeling after they break the clinch is going to be, oh, that was a good elbow, instead of, oh, that was a good takedown attempt. You know what I mean? Or that was a good scramble. Like Suarez was able to get a single leg and pull her into a body lock and bump her to the floor. But then 10 seconds later, Zhang Weili scrambled and created space and she hits her with a knee and an elbow. So like you kind of almost forget the fact that Suarez was able to get the fight to the floor and maybe land a couple of hammer fists. The feeling that you have after the exchange is that Zhang Weili came out better. And I kind of feel like that's going to be the thing that will get rounds for her, is the fact that she has the last word in a lot of the exchanges. That's what I'm expecting. And I do think Suarez is going to make it very competitive. But I think Weili's, like, there was a time in MMA where I was like, the person that holds the power of the middle of the game, which is the wrestling, is the person that is going to win most of the fights. But I don't feel like that's necessarily the case anymore. When now the scoring criteria has shifted and you can win a fight off your back with strikes or with submission attempts. Do you know what I mean? I feel like your willingness to keep hitting the person can win you a fight. And I feel like sometimes wrestlers can get so focused on...
Yeah, but did you see Suarez versus Esparza? She elbowed her to death.
I know, but Esparza gives up, though. Like, she quits. Like, she always did. Like, you know what I mean? You know, and I mean no disrespect, but, like, the difference between her and Zhang Weili is, like Zhang Weili could barely stand up after Rose caught with that head kick, and she's still trying to fight everyone that's holding her up.
Yeah.
Like, these,
there's definitely, yeah.
That's the difference.
Big
in
difference
the two of them.
In that, yeah, for sure.
Like, and the physicality of Zhang Weili as well is something that, even if she's not got the wrestling to compete with Suarez, I think she's going to have the physical strength to be able to, like, muscle her into positions that other strawweights would never be able to.
Yeah, a big part of Suarez is not only the way that she's able to, like, wrap herself around you, and as well the systematic game that she has from going to the back to then back to the front and headlocks into the chokes, and, you know, using her legs. She's good at using her legs and arms to attack you at the same time. But it's like when I saw her fight against Grasso, like, Grasso looked like a baby. It was like baby exactly. Grasso. Like, she was like, yeah, super small. And I remember because I was in the, we were in the same changing room, like, before we walked out. And a lot of the things that she was working on was, like, her coaches had, like, a body lock and she would roll for leg locks. And I was like, ooh, she's fighting Suarez. That's going to be rough.
Yeah.
But now I feel the game has evolved massively. But is it enough? Because I don't think she only just... I'm going to go with Suarez.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What, a decision? Or do you think she can find a finish?
No, second round submission.
Really, yeah.
Or Zhang Weili is going to win. It's either Suarez...
Well, I mean, that's kind of the point of the show.
Up to second round submission or Zhang Weili wins.
No, we're not doing that. We're not doing...
All right.
We're not... This is not the way that the show works. You have to pick which one's going to win.
Okay. Before I started watching them, I thought Zhang Weili against the next
I'll
one that she's going
to
eat
check the show's criteria, but I feel like you've already made your pick. You said that Suarez is going to win second round. Like, I feel like that was said, and yeah, you went with it, and then you changed your mind.
Dude,
you went, oh,
Grasso sub Shevchenko in that first fight, you know, like... We've seen crazy stuff happen, especially women's MMA. It's the most... doesn't make sense ever. Yeah. Yeah. I have a feeling about Suarez.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're going with her then? Yeah, second round submission?
Second round.
Okay. I'm going with Weili, but I think it's going to be a decision, and I think it's going to be a close one. And I wouldn't surprise me if we just get an immediate rematch. Because It wouldn't even surprise me if it's split and someone's going to give it to 3-2 to Suarez. But I do think Weili's going to come out with the belt. Yeah. But that is the fight I am most excited about on the card, I'll be honest.
Yeah.
Like, the main event...
Either way, like, hats off to both these ladies. They are an inspiration to women all over the world. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay,
next.
So 22-2 versus 29-6. Both 6-1, both 76-inch reach. Dricklis du Plessis does switch his stance. Sean Strickland is orthodox. Like, I honestly feel like these guys could fight, like, every weekend, and it's going to go slightly one way and then slightly another, and it's actually playing right now, their first fight.
So who did you score? Because there was a whole controversy.
No, I think du Plessis won. I think he took three rounds. But again, like, that's going back to the co-main event. What we were just saying is, I do feel like the feeling that you get, the aftertaste of an exchange. That's why this one lent in du Plessis' favor. Like, he tried more, he pushed more, he scored takedowns. The other thing as well, watching the countdown show, which I thought was very interesting and very telling is that Dricus du Plessis was quite aware that it was going to be a tough fight. Mm-hmm. And he was aware that the longer the fight went, the more tough it was going to be. So the reverse engineering of the game planning went, well, we expect Strickland to let us start fast for two rounds.
Yeah.
So then we fade and then they'll come on in the third, fourth and fifth, which is absolute perfect logic. And what that allowed du Plessis to do was to manage his pace in the first and second. So as he planned, was enough to potentially win in the round, but not enough to burn unnecessary energy. So when Strickland does start to pick the pace up, he's still got some energy to meet him. And, you know, like, I think, say in the fourth round, the excitement of, oh my goodness, I'm doing this, was fueling du Plessis. And in the fifth round, the, oh shit, I'm losing this, was fueling Strickland. Do you know what I mean? So I think they both got a little bit of a burst of energy for different reasons later in the fight. The difference, though, watching the fight and then watching the countdown show and listening to them both speak, is that du Plessis was giving Strickland the credit that this was going to be a tough fight, and Strickland still feels like he was just beating du Plessis up until they clashed heads. Like, that was the way it came off.
So what cut does he talk about when it's that
one that's bleeding on his eye now?
No, it can't be the one on his eye, because I saw it open with a punch.
Yeah, but he punched
and then punched again, and they put it in the box here, right? And you see it goes boom, and then the blood comes, and then it comes out a bit more obvious in the exchange, obviously, because of the pressure and all of that.
Yeah, but that's also assuming that Strickland has sat and watched the fight, which I absolutely don't think he has.
But that's when I watched it, I thought he was talking about the one on the top of his head.
No, he's talking about the...
The eye one?
Yeah.
No, that was a punch.
No.
100%.
It definitely was, but in Strickland's head, it wasn't. This is what I'm saying.
He must be talking about the other one. There's no way that he could think the one on his eye.
What other cut?
This is the one on the top of the head.
Round. No, that's the one he's talking about. He's talking about as du Plessis was closing in against the fence, they clashed heads. It was a right hand, but they do bang heads together. It's just in Strickland's head, the reason why he got cut was because they clashed heads.
Yeah, no. I saw it open before they touched the fence.
But do you think Strickland sat and watched this back with his notepad and gone, let me see what I did wrong?
I mean,
here.
If he's fighting for the world title, I would like to assume that he has.
I don't think he has at all.
Well, then what he said in the countdown didn't really, like, fill me with confidence when he's like, if I'm fighting somebody that's awkward, you think I'm going to spar with awkward people to get the timing? Or do you think I'm going to spar with the best kickboxers?
Exactly.
Obviously the best kickboxers.
Exactly.
I remember listening as I was working out yesterday. I was like, what did he just say?
Exactly. That's exactly my point. Like, I don't think for a second that Sean Strickland has critically sat and watched this back to go, okay, what did du Plessis do well here? What was his game plan? How did he spend his energy over the five rounds in order to better me? Like, Strickland has got a game which is, look, and I've been critical of Strickland in the past, and I don't mind being critical of Strickland because I will stand by what I'm saying. I appreciate what he did winning the belt. I mean, that absolutely was a shock to me. And what was fascinating about that was the fact that he overcame someone that, in my opinion, was far technically superior with his striking. And in Sean Strickland's mind is, well, I'm a better striker because I beat you with striking. And I totally understand that. But if you look at them from one, like Izzy's technical abilities compared to Strickland's technical abilities, I don't know how you can argue that Izzy is not a technically better mixed martial artist. So then what you do is you look at Strickland, you go, well, why is the thing that he's doing working? And it's because it's been crafted from one sparring session after another against, like, good level opposition. Like, it's reactionary sparring is the way that his style is developed. That's why he's got this cocksucker guard, because it's ideal for when you spar with big gloves. But what
he's gotten way better.
He has gotten way better. But what you notice with this, right? I watched this fight three or four times yesterday. Like, he starts off quite, because I've skipped it back to the first round now, just for the people watching. He starts off kind of like, well, I'm just going to kind of push forward and bully. But because du Plessis's not doing anything, he's just kind of awkward and switching his stance and defending and throwing the odd low kick. Like, Strickland kind of can't get started. And every time Strickland's throwing a jab, he's got a little drift to his left, which brings him right in line for du Plessis's winging overhand right when he's orthodox, which was eventually the thing that opened up the cut, was that right hand coming over the top. But that also stopped Strickland's ability to move in that direction because it started to make him timid. So he started to push forward behind a jab, and then he'd like lean away and put his arm up, like to try and block it. Like that is just not a technically sound thing to do, right? The reason why Pereira knocked him out was because he's reacting with his arms and doing stupid things because his style has been crafted, sparring on the mats at Extreme Couture with big gloves and just having like over cardio in people. And what you've got here is two guys they're the same version of each other in different gyms. I just feel like there's a level of humility that comes with Duplessis' style because he's able to look at his opponent and go, right, well, these are the things that he's, you know, Duplessis definitely watched this fight back. I don't think Strickland's watched this fight back. I think his perspective of it is the same as what it was when he walked out of the cage on that night. And I think that puts him at a massive disadvantage.
Yeah. I feel the kicking of Duplessis, especially his left leg, when he used it to kick to the body was really good. And as well in the fight, you can even see it when the fight's over, they have a little bit of the replays. When Duplessis landed two of those body shots, they were really good because of Strickland leaning back. And I think the physicality of Duplessis is something unlike what most middleweights have faced, because in the fourth round when Izzy was fighting him, I thought in the third round like Izzy looked like great. Izzy looked like he was teeing off, he was connecting. The fourth round they were like, oh, it looks like Duplessis's over, but it looked like Izzy gassed himself punching Duplessis just because Duplessis is so just like a really heavy bag. Like if you would hit a really heavy bag for a while,
yeah,
your arms get tired. His body is a little bit like hitting a heavy bag. That's the best example.
Like Marvin Vettori, similar kind of thing. Like Paulo Costa, like they're big lumps with good athleticism, which means that you put them in a fight with most people and they're going to be problematic.
Mm.
Like what we want from like highest level MMA though is the person to hold the belt in these divisions to. I'm only speaking for myself, obviously, in this scenario, but you want them to feel like Anderson Silva, you know what I mean? Or like Izzy gave me that feeling, although we knew there was a hole in his game, which was obviously his grappling. Like there was a time where Izzy gave you that feeling like this is what elite level martial arts looks like.
Yeah.
And I watched these two and I'm like, this is like good conditioning from rounds and rounds of sparring. And like, it's difficult for me to explain this without, because I'm not in any way trying to insult these two guys, but I'm trying to explain how it looks in my head, because like I can see they don't really have much of a plan. Like I can understand that Duplessis' plan was to do a certain amount in the first two rounds so he didn't gas himself out, but as far as a very specific strategic plan, like, does it go much further than make sure you're kicking his legs and throwing that high kick a few times and keep switching your stance? Because when you're watching Izzy, there's like a, like, for me, watching Izzy is like watching a high-level chess player, right? Whereas these two guys look like two guys that know, they know the rules of chess, but they just keep moving the pieces in directions where, so like, you know, like the world chess champion is like, what is going on here? Like,
yeah, why
are you moving?
I just feel like they,
and like, they like confuse
apply
each other.
It more. You know, like sometimes I feel, you know, Izzy is extremely high level and the way that he does things is like hats off. But sometimes he kind of like does like 30 feints.
Yeah, for sure.
And you know that it's just, oh, he's just going to faint again to see what I'm.
But that's Izzy now, right? Now, Izzy's not at his peak when he was like Izzy Paulo Costa for me is like peak Izzy performance, where you've got someone who is operating at such a high level of martial arts that the person in front of them, for all of their muscles and toughness and punching power and durability, they can't solve this problem in front of them, right? Like, I just don't get the feeling from either of these guys. And it's not that I don't watch it with interest. I just don't watch it with amazement, you know?
Okay,
like,
quick
these
question.
Two guys look more like they're like spamming techniques at each other and which one spams more wins. And like Duplessis is like awkward and they don't seem to be like a, like, what's the thought process in his head? Like, is it, like, I don't, I have, my chess is as limited as I'm explaining.
He said it in interviews. He said, like, all these guys talking about how I set up this, set up that. I don't know. I'm just freaking hitting them.
But that's what I'm saying. But there are people out there that do that. Like, yeah. Canelo does do that, which is why I understand why a high-level boxer would look at this and go, well, they're just spamming punches. Like, because that level isn't evident in this fight. If it was, Strickland wouldn't make the same mistakes that got knocked him out against Pereira, right? And because he's still making those same mistakes here, but Duplessis's not able to capitalize because he's not seeing that game that Pereira played, I feel like everything is up to chance when these two fight. It's who's got the better conditioning, who got the better rest the night before, who had the better weight cut, who had the better flight. You know what I mean? Who did the extra rounds? Who did the extra stairs runs?
Yeah, but you can guarantee that Duplessis did them.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially because if you listen to the way that Strickland talks about that last fight, it's like he has a perspective of what happened as he walked out of the octagon that night, and that is what he took as the absolute truth.
Mm.
Like, he didn't go back And I'm sure that Nick Six watched this fight back 1,000 times and pulled it apart, and he's got books and books of notes. I just wonder how much of that he can impart into Strickland. Like, does Strickland come into the gym and they sit down and they go, right, these are my notes. I want you to watch these things. And I just don't think he's that guy. He's like, nah, let's glove up, let's go. Just glove up, let's go. Strickland, dude, you got to warm up your shoulders and your neck because you're going to get injured. Nah, I'm ready. Let's go. Danny, put your gloves on. Let's go. That's Strickland in the gym in my mind. And I might be getting it wrong, but I just don't see any evidence of it in his fights. I think he's an interesting anomaly in this division, and he's had a lot of success based on the standard of the division currently. And I, with, again, no disrespect, but I feel like Duplessis is in a similar situation. Like, these guys are not Islam Makhachev.
Yeah.
And
no,
Moicano and Chandler.
Completely.
And, you know?
Yeah, I feel it's not like a blanket statement. It's not always, but like the lower the weight level, sort of the higher the skill, like, because you can't just throw a punch and like knock him out, you know? You have to do a whole bunch of other things, and there's a whole bunch of other things they can do to you. I just feel like Duplessis has a lot more into, maybe Strickland is also able to do this, but Duplessis does them in a fight, which is like he throws more kicks instead, like the front kick. I feel like he's just going to tempt Strickland into throwing the front kick and hits the leg as it comes down then, instead of when they're just standing, because that's when Strickland is very good at checking the kick. But it's just the drive, for example, that he has on his takedowns, the cut through the stuff. Like, to go from the takedown straight into the choke, that was impressive against Izzy. And I think the fact that he was able to do that in the fourth round, being tired and pushing through, is going to give him even more confidence against going with a guy that the biggest fear is he's going to, like, waterboard you with... Mm. jabs and teeps and other punches. Not that they can't be effective, but one thing that we saw Costa do well in his fight was when he started to attack the body.
Mm.
And that's what Alex Pereira did to get him to, like, to knock him out, is also attack the body. And I think Duplessis would have... I think he's just going to show, like, a big leap. Kind of like Makhachev versus Volkanovski 1 versus 2, that there was a big difference. Although, obviously, late notice fight and all that. But I just feel there's just a lot more that he is able to apply during a fight.
For sure. It's like if they were both a playlist and each technique is equated to a song. Sean Strickland's playlist has got like 5 or 6 songs on it that play on repeat. And Duplessis has got like 25 on his playlist that play on repeat.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't know which one's going to come next. He's going to spin, or he's going to kick you in the leg, or he's going to teep you in the midsection, or he's going to level change, which obviously he started to sprinkle in the second round, or he's going to kick in the head, then he's going to start winging over the top with hooks. Like, there's more variety in his game, which seemed to keep Strickland on the back foot for longer in the fight. And like, look how out of posture Strickland gets, because this is the problem with the Philly shell style. It works really well if you're able to keep your feet where they are. Like, the problem that Strickland was having is that, like, this Philly shell stopped working because Strickland's just coming over the top. Duplessis is just coming over the top, which means that the Philly shell's good if you've got two people that are standing in a range and one of them's rolling stuff off their shoulder, but the point where that person breaks your center line, you're out of shape. And that's where Strickland started to then, he's trying to come out and meet punchers because he doesn't want his posture to be broken. And Duplessis just moves forward, he crashes forward. Like, weird kind of movement. Man, this is... Thank goodness for the co-main event. Bless these guys.
Okay, real quick. Don't forget to like and subscribe. I should have said that way.
Don't forget to like and subscribe.
Okay, and...
Oh, hang on.
By the way, I did pass my test. You said that I wasn't going to.
She did pass the
test.
But
good job for driving me to the test. The lady was really mean to everybody. Mm. She was all like, hey, put down your hood and stuff. Not to me, because I didn't have like a hood up, but you know, she was a bit like, you want to stay in this country? I'm your leader. I was like, all right, lady, chill down. Okay, but movies that we watched.
Oh, yes.
Shout out real quick.
Yeah, we got through it. Thank you for all the recommendations.
Yeah, it was really awesome. Obviously,
like,
we haven't watched all of them yet, because, I mean, there was a lot.
Oh, and also, while I've got your attention on this, thanks for reminding me. American Primeval, if you've watched it, give it a score out of 10. Jamie's watching it with a thumbs up. That's usually a good sign. It keeps popping up and I'm digging it, so I'm going to get into it at some point. But give me a score, an out of 10 in the comments, along with any other movie suggestions that you've got. We got through a few, didn't we? Like Total Recall, Twister. We watched The Craft the other night, classic.
Yeah. Real quick on The Craft.
True Romance.
Why is it that like whenever they have... There's always like the girls at school, right? You either have the ultra pink lady, right? Who's like, oh my God, like I can't believe this.
Yeah, or the witches.
Or like the super goth, which is really like a giant hater to everybody. She's just bitter and like, you can't just have somebody cool that isn't the biggest hater on earth. Like, why is it the only two options are you're obnoxious or... You're like...
Because she's clearly angry at the world, baby. That's why. I'll explain to you afterwards. I was that kid at school, so I totally align with that feeling.
No, I remember being at school and just being like, okay, I definitely... These girls annoy me, but whatever. I'm not going to base my whole personality on hating them either. I got my own stuff to do, you know? And that's why it's kind of like draws the line of whether you can... Yeah, it's a bit weird. I don't understand. You just be normal, you know. Just be cool, like what you like. True Romance.
Great movie.
That was amazing.
See, Duplessis is just more game. He's just more willing to be in Strickland's face. And he's more willing to eat the jabs that Strickland keeps throwing out, which is usually what he's able to bully and push people around with. Like, Duplessis is just like, ah, whatever, bro. Just punch me in the face and... I'm still going. And the other thing as well is because the way that he moves, he windshield wipers his head to the side to power his punches, which means that Strickland can't keep him off because he's never in the same place. Carry on. Sorry, True Romance. Sorry, we're 30 seconds before the end of the third round here.
Mm. Did you make a choice? I predict Duplessis.
I think
he finishes him this time.
Yeah.
Third round.
I think it might be later than that. Third round's up. Yeah. See, I think Strickland might make the mistake that he was expecting Duplessis to make the last time and start too fast in the first two rounds, like he did against Izzy. Because he's like, first round against Izzy, I was just on his case, right? Because why not? Roll the dice till the wheels fall off. Whereas he was a bit more cautious in this first couple of rounds. And I think that might push him to... be more aggressive and therefore play into Duplessis' hands a bit more, make his takedowns easier.
Mm.
I think Duplessis.
Yeah.
Go on, True Romance. What else?
Yeah,
did we
True
watch?
Romance
that
was good.
One, really good.
It
one.
Started. No, nothing. Better not tell these people what I said during the movie. But like, yeah, it started off, it was pretty good. It was like Pulp Fiction / Sin City. I was into it. Those type of movies I'm into. There was a few that you guys said that Dan said I couldn't watch it, like the one where, what is the Eat to Death?
Yeah, Seven.
Yeah, he said you guys put in a bunch of weird ones.
Let me explain this to you. I mean, we can, you know, she can watch whatever movies she likes based on my recommendation.
Oh, yeah, that sounds a little bit like you control everything.
Right.
All right, sorry.
Trim my mustache.
It's I do. I get like nightmares if the movie's very gory and stuff.
That would definitely give you nightmares. Like, I can close my eyes and picture scenes out of that movie still.
Yeah, I'm not.
Jamie's nodding. It's like, it's one of those movies that just stays with you for the rest of your life. There were a few of them.
Like, Final Destination. I saw one of them where like the lady dies of the tanning bed, and I still remember. And anytime I look at a tanning bed, that picture's in my head. Like, it can't be too much.
See, I'd grown out of that stuff by that. By Final Destination and Saw, I'd grown out of it because I'm like, I don't need that in my brain. Like,
no, it's a bit too much.
That's staying with me. I also, I've had the same moment where I've checked out of certain TV shows as well, like Sons of Anarchy. I'm like, this was good until this point, and now this is in my highlight reel of terrible things that humanity is capable of, and I don't need it anymore. So it's another reason why I've stopped watching the news most of the time, and I've also moved Instagram on my phone. I know it sounds dramatic, but not deleted it, because obviously I need it for work purposes, but I've moved it on my home screen to a different place. And the other week, after I'd moved it, I noticed that I'd opened up my guitar learning app. Like, I'm like, what am I doing on? Like, I don't even have a guitar with me. Like, I'm on a plane or something. I'm like, oh god.
Yeah.
I'm clicking on Instagram automatically. So I'm currently.
Yeah, but hiding it just takes it long. That's like when I hide the snacks from myself, but I know where they are. It just takes me longer to find them.
But that's the thing, is it's not like I've not hidden it from myself.
Yeah, in a way you have.
What I've done is I've taken away the automation of opening it. That's what I've taken away, because I realized that I was opening it automatically. Hmm. See, now if I start opening my phone and I open another app automatically, I'll have to move that app somewhere else.
Yeah,
I don't like the unconscious nature of the way that it had got me. And it's the same thing, like, coffee, sit down, news on. Oh my god, what's happening with the
just
world?
Like, people can like give nice stuff. Can't, it's like it. You open Instagram, and especially because we follow so many MMA people, it's like the latest thing said by this one person that shouldn't have a phone when they're in certain places with certain substances.
So to give you a perspective, that was why some of these movies were, although recommended and great movies, why we have yet to gotten around to watching them.
Yeah, Dances with Wolves.
That's a great movie. That's
one of his fight.
That's one of my mushroom movies, that one. It is. It is. I mean, it's, you know, like, it is. Like, get a good heroic dose going. And
Reservoir Dogs was good.
That was good.
But I didn't score it as high as True Romance. Like, True Romance was, I was quite surprised by how into the relationship they were with each other, especially with how it started. I was very skeptical, you know, like, if I was their parents, I was a little bit like the cop dad,
you,
like,
know,
this isn't gonna work.
I mean, it doesn't matter how the movie goes, you know it's gonna end badly.
I'm like,
just the way it starts.
I thought I was like a romantic person until I saw that movie, then I realized that I'm no. But
so
yeah,
what else did we watch? What were the other ones?
We saw Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Oh, that was good.
That was good, but I didn't like that one as much as Uncle Buck.
Uncle Buck's classic.
Because he was just like more annoying.
Mm.
And it's not that he was
element.
More annoying. That
and
he
Equilibrium,
was,
that's the other one.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. He was a little bit more like how I am, into an extreme. And
that's
the other guy
like
was a little bit more like how you are, but
you
to an
like
extreme.
It.
So I was just watching it and I was like, am I this annoying?
That's why you didn't like it. Because you were like, oh my god, he's really annoying. Oh my god, I'm a lot like him. You were like, I don't like this movie. This is horrible.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay. It's a great movie.
But we'll keep watching
what
them.
What was his name?
Then
John Candy. Oh, he was, shout out to John Candy. Rest in peace, my friend. He was fantastic.
Hmm. And the other guy was the one from Pink Panther, right?
Yes, he was.
One of my favorite scenes. I would like to buy a dumbbell. I would like to buy a dumbbell. We should end this podcast.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you guys for watching.
Yeah. Any more recommendations, though, put them in the comments, because we do appreciate them. We are getting through some movies at the moment, so that's good.
And let us know what your predictions are for the fights.
Yes. Enjoy, subscribe, and like, and all that. And we'll see you next time.